The Brad Sessmatt Show, broadcasting live from the Skyview Network Studios.
So great to be here because we have Michael Fabiano on the show today. And that means one thing. Those of you that have followed us through the last 7 years know that fantasy football means the start of football season. And Michael from the NFL Network, the Hall of Famer, will be with us coming up in about 15 minutes. We have Goody at the Movies today. I'm somewhat disappointed in Bill because the movie list that I have from Bill does not include Pooh, which I went and saw with my wife, and I sobbed like a little two-year-old. It was embarrassing. Man card revoke. But he has McQueen, Puzzle, and Death of a Nation. So I have Goody at the Movies. That comes up towards the end of the program. Our opening comments brought to you by Sagicor Now. Protect what matters most. You need life insurance. You know it, and I know it. If you've gotten your free quote online, you just simply go to Sagicor Now. Sagicor Now, protect what matters most. Do that with Sagicor. Log on. We appreciate Sagicor and their support. We are self-funded. That means those sponsors that you see over the next hour on this show say, we believe in you. We appreciate them and for you joining us each and every day. So the story of the day, there are a couple places to go on this. I can go really heavy with Urban Meyer, which I'm going to do. Or I can go really light with, I now have something to do over Thanksgiving weekend other than watch U of A and ASU both scuffling at about 5 or 6 wins apiece, playing one another. It has come out that Tiger and Phil are, in fact, going to have their showdown. They are going to compete against one another on the golf course. The much-anticipated matchup will be a 2-day deal. The purse is still to be determined, being reported at $10 million to the winner. 2 days, 36 holes, Tiger v. Phil in prime time on Thanksgiving weekend. Who wouldn't want to watch that? It's Black Friday. I'm going to go out and watch people slug each other in Walmart over a jigsaw puzzle, or I can watch Tiger and Phil. Hey, honey, you want to go out and shop for Dockers? Knock yourself out. I'm going to watch Phil and Tiger do their thing. Uncle Phil's crazy. Hey, guess what, Uncle Phil? You guys go to the zoo. I'm going to watch Phil against Tiger. Why not? They're going to play this in Las Vegas. Of course they are. Everything eventually is going to be in Las Vegas. Like, Eric, did you hear Larry Scott last week at the Pac-12 Football Media Days just flat out saying they're going to move the Pac-12 title game without saying it directly? You just read between the lines. We are going to get out of San Francisco, and we are going to Vegas.
They should.
Well, they should, and it gives you and I another excuse to go on a road trip to Vegas.
Yeah, and the game would be far more attended in Vegas than it would be in the Bay Area.
Well, you have Phil and Tiger that are there now, and that's going to be on November 23rd and 24th. You know, a follow-up on the thing with Larry Scott. I was talking to a friend of mine who said the buzz at the Pac-12 media day was UNLV, San Diego State in the Pac-12, Washington State, Oregon State, conceivably out of the Pac-12. What would you think of that?
I see why that would make sense.
Yeah, yeah. My mighty Aztecs would get in and get their heads kicked in.
Two pretty favorable media markets in Vegas and San Diego.
Well, and you'd
taking
also
taking out Corvallis and Pullman.
Yeah, and Pullman could end up playing University of Idaho. So I think if they're in the same conference, that would make sense.
But that would really suck for those two schools, though. I mean, that would be
sure
just like the ultimate kick in the face. Say, hey, thanks for everything, but you're out of the conference. Have fun in the Mountain West or wherever you land.
But as Jerry Colangelo is trying to build this new conference with GCU and Brian Mueller on the competition committee leading it for the WAC.
Well, those are two West Coast schools that would
be
open.
Thank you very much.
So.
I'm telling you, when
and
this
Gonzaga could pair with Washington State as a travel partner. So
when all this comes out in the next, I'd say in the next 2 years is when all the movement of TV contracts are expiring. I don't think we're going to recognize the landscape of college football. I think we're going to. It's already hard imagining Maryland in the Big Ten. I don't think that's resonated with anybody at all. And I think we're going to have more of that.
Or Rutgers
in the Big Ten. No, you're right. Urban Meyer, so last night I put something out, or I texted you about a recruit tied to that, and your stance was pretty, let's wait and see how this turns out.
He got grounded.
So you don't think he's going anywhere?
I didn't say that. I just think it's the ultimate, what happened with Urban Meyer is we're not sure what we're going to do, so we're just going to suspend him.
Yeah.
And a suspension is such a wide range of whatever. I mean, is Urban Meyer sitting at home not doing anything football related right now? No, of course not. Let's be real about
this. You don't think he's with his attorney saying this is how we get out of this deal?
I'm sure he's been with his attorney, but I also know that Ohio State's going to be playing football games for the next month.
Today's our first day of practice.
So...
Today's our first day of practice. He's not there. Could you imagine?
Until something happens, Brad, to me, nothing's happened. Either he's going to get reinstated and Gene Smith's going to come out and say, he's our coach moving forward, blah, 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 blah. We love Urban Meyer, go. Or it's, we're firing Urban Meyer. What he did was inexcusable. Until one of those two things happen, nothing's really happened.
Okay, so I read and consumed some media back there in Columbus today.
Pretty bad stuff.
The police report had boxes checked that she called the police 9 times on this deal.
She being the ex-wife of the wide receiver coach. Coach Smith.
Okay, the first police report was under seal. There's now a police report that has no boxes checked that has surfaced. And so, you know, when you're talking about small towns, this is not in Columbus in this county. It's akin to saying you're in Phoenix when actually you're in Apache Junction.
Right.
Right. So for some reason, I heard two stories today, two different interviews today in Columbus, two different podcasts of the police report now has been changed. It's not what it once was that was seen. Okay. I just feel as though there's so much smoke around this deal. And the whole idea of domestic violence not being reported by someone in that position of authority when the ex-wife has text messages showing that she texted every assistant coach's wife, including Urban Meyer's, and that she said, Urban Meyer's wife said, Urban's aware and he knows.
Nope.
And so he lied last week.
Yep.
So a coach lies on at the podium at Big Ten Media Day. Is that enough for him to get dismissed?
Sure. When it comes to something like this. I mean, to me, this is like zero tolerance.
Well, it's also Title IX. You have to look at the Title IX. People just say on the surface, like I was talking to a friend last night who has a high profile recruit. And he called me while I'm working out. And he's like, he's not going to get let go, is he? And this is somebody that has got players that... They could go a lot of places. Yeah, I mean, Urban Meyer's in a spot where there's the side of, well, it's football, just forget about all this stuff, give me my football. And then it's the other side of, no, guys, domestic violence is not something you screw around with. And it's not something you lie about. It's not something that you sweep under the rug.
You also realize, Brad, that Zach Smith is Earl Bruce's grandson. Did you know that?
I did not know that.
Earl Bruce, former Ohio State head coach.
And Earl Bruce's name has been brought into this as trying to do damage control, too.
Yep.
And Ohio State has a history of things. Jim Tressel, they were going to bring him back. Then it got worse. Jim O'Brien was a basketball coach there that they had to pay off to get out of town because he had some things that went awry. Thad Matta, they paid $8 million, Eric, to get rid of him as the basketball coach last year. Urban Meyer has 5 years left at $25 million. That's $33 million combined if you're trying to get Urban Meyer out of there. Where do you have $33 million? Well, of course you have that from the Big Ten Network TV contract. You can do it. And then there's the question of who is the next coach? Dan Campbell at Iowa State has very strong ties there. He would definitely be somebody on the radar, but that shoe has not dropped as of yet. Facts are, when you have a job like Ohio State, where the sharks are swimming, and you think that the college landscape is set for the coming year, no. That's why it changes like that. And so that story, as the day progresses, yesterday morning we brought it up as this is going on, better keep an eye on this. By last night, and unfortunately for Ohio State, there was nothing else going on in sports last night. So everything on every media outlet, wall to wall, was Ohio State. And that's still going on today. Michael Fabiano is next from the NFL Network. We'll get caught up with Michael on all things fantasy football. It'll be good to catch up with him. And then later, good at the movies. Sports360AZ.com. I'm Brad Sussmat. Time now to talk fantasy football. It's so nice to say that. Even though I am not a fan of football in August, it is back. I mean, people can sit and watch. I know Michael Fabiano is going to be watching. The Hall of Famer from the NFL Network. It is good to hear your voice again. How are you?
I'm good, my friend. How are you, man? Like, this is the fastest offseason that I can remember since last offseason. The time just flies. And it's so good to get back to football, and we have a game tonight. So, yep. And there's actually some very interesting fantasy players going in that game as well. So people will be watching.
So I'm going to go right to James Conner, okay? And I'm sure, Michael, and you're thinking the NFL offseason, leading a fantasy football segment with James Conner would not be the way to go. However, we're sitting here for the second year in a row with Le'Veon Bell. And running backs with David Johnson over here and Todd Gurley getting his new deal. Let's just talk about the dominoes of running back and what's going on in Pittsburgh from a fantasy drafting standpoint. Because when I told people you're coming on, all I got was James Conner.
Yeah, which is a bit surprising to me. Like, I get that Le'Veon Bell is projected to hold out and basically do the same thing that he did last year. And I also see that there have been instances where running backs have held out in the past and they've either been injured or haven't performed up to par. Bell's also coming off the season with well over 400 touches. I believe he had 406 last season. So there is concern. But I wrote an article that's actually on NFL.com now that you can check out. And I covered why. I still believe Le'Veon Bell is the number one overall pick in fantasy football. And that's not to say Todd Gurley's not worth it, because he is, or David Johnson or Zeke Elliott or even Antonio Brown in PPR leagues. But Bell has a long history of putting up big-time numbers. He's still a young guy. He is basically in a contract year now. He's already said that this could potentially be his last year, or his agent said that. So you're looking at a guy who has to have a big season in order to try and secure a big contract in 2019. And we all know that that's difficult, because if it weren't, Bell wouldn't be in the situation that he's in right now. And the Steelers have Super Bowl aspirations, so they're going to feed him the football. And I like to use the example of CeCe Sabathia being a Yankees fan back in the day when he was traded to the Milwaukee Brewers, and the Brewers knew that he was not going to be on the roster after that season. So they used him a lot. And he ended up doing very well for the Brewers, was a guy who started seemingly every other game for Milwaukee at that point. But I think you're going to see the same kind of thing with Le'Veon Bell, in that maybe the Steelers don't expect him to be back in 2019, so they are going to use him. Now, is he going to see another 400 touches? Maybe not, but I still would expect him to get into that 375 touch range. And just based on his skill set, based on his versatility, based on the fact that he can get you 80 catches. And I don't think he's an injury risk either, to be quite honest with you, because if you look at the major injury that he did suffer, that was a few years back when Vontaze Burfict landed awkwardly on his leg, twisted it, and then he missed significant time. Well, that was sort of a freak injury. It wasn't a situation where he cut and blew out his knee, or it was some sort of non-contact injury. It was a freak injury. And to me, Bell is more durable than maybe some people give him credit for. And some of the other time he's missed has been due to suspension. So is Bell a guarantee to be the number one running back in fantasy football in 2018?
Yeah.
Nothing's guaranteed.
Yep.
But I would be shocked if he's not one of the top three guys in an offense that's going to score a whole lot of points.
Okay. And your strategy then on Conner is what? Is there a no strategy? Are you thinking, Brad, come on? What
to be honest with you, he's a late-round flyer. He really is. I mean, I'm in drafts that I've seen he's not even picked. And when he is picked, he's a late-rounder. Back in the day, and you know, this is something you probably remember too, is that a lot of people would handcuff running backs.
Sure.
But the position's so deep right now, and it's so talented, that doesn't really happen very much anymore now. If you decide that you want to handcuff Bell with Conner late in your draft, I completely see that. I understand it. I understand if you want to take a flyer on a guy like James Conner. Same kind of thing with, say, Chris Ivory with LeSean McCoy situation. Mm-hmm. If you want to take a chance on him late, absolutely. It makes all the sense in the world. But I don't think there's a great chance that James Conner is going to come out and put up huge numbers or be a fantasy asset because there's a guy ahead of him in Le'Veon Bell, who is one of the three or four best running backs in the league in fantasy football. He's not a guy who's prone to injuries, and I get it. He's holding out again, but you have to look back at last year. He had a slow start to the season, but after that, he took off. Once he had that fourth game against the Ravens, I mean, his numbers were tremendous. So Connor is not someone I'm targeting late unless I'm in a deeper league and I'm just taking a flyer on him. And to be honest, that is the limit of his value at this point.
Talking fantasy football with Michael Fabiano, the Hall of Famer from the NFL Network, NFL.com. You can check out his content. Here with the Arizona Cardinals, David Johnson, your strategy, you have no questions at all. I know you're big on him as the person. Do you need to see some stuff here in training camp out of him? They open up with the Chargers in preseason. What's your strategy on David Johnson?
If he's there after the top three running backs are off the board, then I'm taking him. I have all the faith in the world in David. He showed 2 years ago that he was one of the elite players at that position. And last year, unfortunate with that injury, and in that game, I believe it was against Detroit, he actually was on pace to put up another big game.
Yes, he was.
The Cardinals have Larry Fitzgerald. They have DJ. Those are their two centerpieces. The quarterback position is a little bit of a question mark at this point between Sam Bradford and Josh Rosen. We'll see what happens. And I still believe that DJ is a guy who doesn't have a lot of tread on the tires. Mm-hmm. He is versatile. I've said it a million times. He reminds me of Priest Holmes, not only in just his build and his number, but in his game and his skill set as well. So unless you decide that you want to take Antonio Brown fourth overall in PPR leagues, which I completely understand, I think DJ is a top four pick, and at worst, he's a top five pick. The volume is going to be there. The opportunities are going to be there, and we already know the talent is there.
What's your strategy on Sam Bradford?
There is not a strategy on Sam Bradford. Sam Bradford is not draftable to me. Number one, because I don't know that he's going to be the starter in Arizona all season long. Josh Rosen, I believe, will make starts as a rookie. And you know what, Brad? The position is just so deep.
Right.
So
right.
I continue, and now you've got Andrew Luck back. And that's a big storyline too, because if he continues to look good, I mean, his ADP right now is in the double-digit rounds. This is a guy who in his last four full seasons was top four or better three times in fantasy points. So the position is deeper, and it's lost value because it's so deep and you only start one quarterback in traditional fantasy leagues. So I don't know that Bradford will be drafted, to be quite honest with you. I would rather draft Jameis Winston, to be quite honest, and he's a guy who's going to miss the first three games.
Yeah.
If you're in a league where you get one of, say, the first five to six quarterbacks, you know, and we're talking about like Aaron Rodgers, Tom Brady, Deshaun Watson, Russell Wilson, Cam Newton, Carson Wentz, unless you're worried about Wentz and the knee, I wouldn't even draft a second quarterback. Where I draft a second quarterback is where I am in the situation of having drafted, say, Matthew Stafford as my number one, or Ben Roethlisberger or Kirk Cousins as my number one. Then I would potentially go out and grab a second quarterback quickly thereafter, maybe the next round or two after that. But Bradford just doesn't fit on that list for me. And does that mean that he's going to put up bad numbers this year? Of course not. Could he potentially be a DFS option or a matchup-based starter? No doubt about it. But is he someone that I'm drafting even late? Typically, that won't be the case.
Before I get you out of here, we're talking with Michael Fabiano, the Hall of Famer at the NFL Network and NFL.com. Who do you flat just stay away from that usually every year everybody's all over? But you know it's at that point in their career where done, finished, don't do it. You know you want to, but don't do it.
See, I never say never. I never say never because if a guy falls to me at a spot where I feel like his value just makes too much sense to take a chance on, then I'll do it. But there's certainly players I'm avoiding this year based on where they're going. LeSean McCoy is one of them. 30 years old, was great last year. Offensive line has question marks in Buffalo. The whole offense has question marks in Buffalo. And you've got that off-field stuff. So whereas McCoy may have been a second rounder before all this, maybe I'd take him in the third round, maybe not, depending on where he falls to me. Jarvis Landry. Now, I don't know what's going on with Josh Gordon. It doesn't seem anyone does. But assuming Josh Gordon is going to be available for the Browns this year, Landry is not a guy I would draft as a one in a PPR league. He is coming off of what I like to call the magical season. I think there's going to be some regression in terms of his touchdowns, regression in terms of his targets, because that Browns team is now loaded. And yes, I did just say that Browns team is now loaded. on the offensive side.
Stop the presses. Michael's on the Browns. There you go. I like it.
They have a lot of talent.
Bold prediction, Michael Fabiano.
The problem there is that everything's going to be spread out. So Carlos Hyde, who was the RB9 last year in PPR league, is someone I'd avoid unless it's worth a late round flyer, because I don't know who's going to see most of the touches between him, Duke Johnson, and Nick Chubb. And maybe this is a three-headed committee. You know, Jordan Reed, all the talent in the world, this guy can't stay healthy. But if he's there in the 9th or 10th round, I may take a chance on him because at that point, he's going to be worth the risk. There's other players like Kenyon Drake, who was a league winner last year. But look at the circumstances. Last year, he was the guy. Last 5 games, he averaged over 21 touches. I don't think that's going to happen now. And as much as you want to make jokes about Frank Gore being 35 years old and washed up, he is not washed up. And I would not be surprised, I'm not projecting this, but I would not be surprised if Gore is the starter in week one in Miami's backfield. That's not to say that's going to be the situation. Drake is very talented. He's very versatile. But he's also never really been a featured back anywhere he's been, in college or in Miami. Remember, Jay Ajayi was traded and Damian Williams got hurt.
Right.
And Drake was good last year. And people are high on him. But I wouldn't take a 3rd-round pick on him right now. I'd probably wait until the 4th round. And at that point, he may not be there. There's a few columns I wrote in the offseason. One of them is certain situations that we're not projecting that could potentially happen and ruin someone's fantasy value. And Frank Gore seeing more carries and more touches than we're projecting is one of those scenarios. So Drake is someone that I would avoid as a 3rd-round pick. I'd wait until the 4th round if he's there. That also goes for a guy like Brandon Cooks, a guy like Sammy Watkins. I wouldn't want to take a pick on those guys too soon, because I feel like they're limited in terms of their ceilings based on where they are right now.
As always, really good, strong. You brought it hard. I think the fact you've had all off season away from me is good, because this was awesome.
This is what I've been waiting for all off season. Are you kidding me?
Yeah.
This is what I've been waiting for all off season, is to do the show. It's funny, because yesterday I was up at 6 o'clock in the morning to do a podcast with my friend Evan Silva from Roto World.
Yeah,
and I probably sounded about half asleep. So this is just sort of gearing up here into getting a lot of these podcasts and radio interviews moving along. And NFL Fantasy Live is going to be starting up next week on August 9th online. And then we'll be on the network first week of the regular season. We're back, my friend. We are back.
Good to hear your voice, Michael. Thanks.
Take care, bud.
Michael Fabiano with us from the NFL Network, NFL.com, all things fantasy football, sports360az.com. Brad Sussmat, Football AZ on Fox Sports Arizona, 16 airings per week. Thanks for being with us. All right, so let's get into the Diamondbacks. It's a really good time to follow what's going on in baseball, and I usually don't say that in August. August is one of the hardest months of the year for me, guys, to get through as I sit here every day. It just is. I have a hard time accepting the NFL putting really good players out in harm's way for meaningless games and make money. I know tonight's the first preseason game. I know you fans get excited, but every August. Yesterday, if you're a Packer fan, you lost one of your best players. Over what? And so I have a hard time handling August football. I usually have a hard time handling August baseball. In the baseball world, this is known as the dog days of the season. You can't quite see the finish line. It's just another game and another night. But no, it's more than that. It's the Giants and Diamondbacks. The Giants are just right there on the end of, we are going to wave the white flag for the season. The Diamondbacks are going to face Madison Bumgarner tonight. The Diamondbacks are throwing Zach Greinke tonight. So it's got everything that I love in sport. Here are the Diamondbacks a half game up. They're actually in a really good spot. I don't know if we're going to be able to circle back at the end of the year in what will be 7 weeks from now and say the end of July, 1st of August were the key dates for the Diamondbacks. And here's what I mean by that. Their bullpen has been run into the ground. Like every day there's someone out there in the bullpen. Tuesday night, TJ McFarland came in and gave them 2+ innings. Tuesday, they also acquired Brad Ziegler at the trade deadline. They didn't have to use their bullpen at all on Tuesday. Yesterday, they had a complete day off. To have 2 full days where your bullpen doesn't do anything in the course of a season, when I say your bullpen doesn't do anything, I don't mean that top to bottom. TJ McFarland did come in, but Boxberger didn't have to get up. Bradley didn't have to get up. Chafin didn't have to get up. He's been on the maternity leave deal. Ziegler comes in as a fresh arm. That's four fresh arms. And you have Zach Greinke going tonight. Essentially what the Diamondbacks are trying to do off of all these deals is shorten games. If you're Zach Greinke and you can throw 90 pitches and get to the seventh inning, now all of a sudden it's, okay, we're going to have Ziegler come in here and get a couple of outs. We're going to have Chafin come in and get that tough lefty out. We're going to have Archie come in the eighth. We're going to have Boxberger come in the ninth. And we're just going to shorten up the games. That's really what they've done here. And it's smart because you can't tax, you can't throw these guys out there every day like they were doing. That bullpen was on fire in a bad way. They've been throwing so much. So to have two full days and possibly three, if Greinke goes out and does his thing tonight, and you guys know where I'm at on him, you pay him $33 million, these are the games where you go out and you just put your foot down on the neck of the Giants and knock them out. They're in first place on August 2nd. I will take that. So that's going on tonight. There's another story going on the west side of the town. So I've mentioned to you how there is some news that is going to happen involving the Coyotes and ownership. There is an ownership group that is out there kicking the tires on the Coyotes once again. You're going to roll your eyes and say, Brad, I've heard this over and over and over, and the Coyotes are still here. They've signed Oliver Ekman-Larsson, their biggest player, to a long contract. If you read the details of that contract, you will see that it's very minimal outlay financially in the first couple of years and a lot of money on the back end. What does that mean? That means that's somebody trying to sell the team, which I believe Barrowway is trying to do. And I'm pretty sure he's got some people that are hitting on. In fact, I know he's got one group that's hitting on him. That said, a big story in the business circuit of sports came out just yesterday, that the people that run the arena that the Coyotes play in, AAG, the city of Glendale, pays AAG $5.5 million a year to manage that arena. They extended their contract with them through 2026 yesterday. So the city has this long agreement. We know that the Coyotes are trying to move. I believe that Phoenix Rising situation, they're looking at doing a rollout tray of a field in an enclosed facility, means that there could be something there with Rising and the Coyotes. I'm just purely speculating here on this front. But for all of these little notes, just keep an eye on what's going on the west side. The big story for fans is Shane Doan's going to be retired. His jersey's going to be retired next February. Of course it is. It's supposed to be retired. That's the easy story. The hard story is for you fans that want to see hockey stay here like me and want MLS to come here like me, this is a bigger story, a far bigger story, that there's been some movement behind the scenes, and I think on an ownership front, you're going to see more of this pop up in the next couple of weeks. Goody at the Movies is next, sports360az.com. We partner with the Arizona Republic at times, and we're back with more after this timeout. Now, because you know what's going on in the world of sports, it is time, as we do every week, to talk with Bill Goodykunz, chief film critic for Gannett, AZ Central. It has been a while. How are you?
I'm good. It has been a while. There's been a lot of stuff going on.
There has been a lot of stuff going on. I did not see you at Christopher Robin unless you were incognito. And you don't have
Chris, not go.
And you don't have Christopher Robin on the list. So,
was it good?
So she cried, then I cried. Doesn't happen often.
Aww.
Yeah, I know. and you know, Tigger had to do the wonderful thing about Tiggers and all that stuff. But no, I thought it was fine. It was, if you go in with the expectation that this is not Gone with the Wind, you're going to be just fine. You know, so this is not Godfather. It's not going to win Best Picture, but it's fine. So
that's a glowing endorsement.
No, that's right. That's right. All right. So let's get right to this. You saw three movies I've got here. So let's start with McQueen. How was McQueen? What is this about?
It was very good. It's a documentary, and it has to do with Alexander McQueen, who was a pretty famous fashion designer and he's from London. He's kind of one of these kind of like, you know, working class guys that like, and I mean, he came to a kind of a bad, sad end. I mean, he had a lot of problems and stuff, and he ended up hanging himself the night before his mother's funeral. So, you know, there's kind of downbeat.
Wow.
But he did all this stuff. He would have these incredible shows where they were just big extravaganzas, and they were as much about, you know, that as the drama as anything else. But he's one of these guys that, like, and you see this sometimes. He was designing clothes out of like garbage and stuff, and then all of a sudden, you know, Givenchy or one of these big houses made him their creative director, just sort of out of the blue. And it's like, dang, I would like just one day for somebody to just walk up and say, you know, go run the New York Times or something.
Yeah, that's kind of cool, right? Just out of the blue. No, it's. You know, you can come over here and run Sports 360, and I'll make you feel important. I don't know. But so is this good? Is this good?
One of the things that happens with these people a lot of times is you get it, and it's not really what you wanted. You know, and it's not making you happy the way you thought it might have. And that's, I think, part of that. But it's really well done, and it's really cool, and it's really well made. And even if you don't like fashion and stuff, it's kind of an interesting entry into that world. So.
And this is showing at Camelview?
It is.
All right. That's good. It's good. Puzzle. What is Puzzle all about?
Puzzle is about puzzles. And this, again, has a thing that I like.
Of course it does.
Sometimes I see a movie where this woman, she's not quite mouthy, but it's Kelly MacDonald, who's great, and she's always in these, like, you know, small roles and stuff, and then she gets to be the star. The movie starts, and she's, like, working her butt off to get ready for this big birthday party. And then the birthday happens, and you realize it's her party. And she, like, her husband and kids don't do anything. And but one of the things she gets is a puzzle, like one of these hard puzzles, you know, 1,000 pieces or something. She puts it together in 5 minutes, breaks it apart, does it again. And it turns out she's good at it. And she's never left her little upstate New York home and her town. And this just sort of opens up this new world to her. And it's good, and she's especially good. But I have always wondered if I love it in movies when somebody has this previously unknown talent, and usually it's like somebody turns out to be a great assassin or something. You know, mm-hmm. I forgot that I can shoot a gun better than anybody else. But I would just like to stumble upon something that I did better, just like without even knowing it. You know, without having to work at it, just all of a sudden be good at.
What is your hidden talent, Bill?
I'm still hidden, as far as
I happen to think I'm kind of good at cooking, and then I made spaghetti for my son last night, and he said this is dog food. So, you know,
I'm okay at cooking, but I have to work at it.
Yeah.
I didn't just fall out. And that's another one. Couldn't you imagine a movie like that where somebody handed somebody a chef knife and said, hey, could you just, like, you know, chop up the carrots or something like that? And all of a sudden they're just like, you know, going to town, you know.
Sure.
Keep waiting for something like that, but not so far. Nothing.
It's like the movie Cocktail, right? It's that bartender that can, which was a dreadful movie, but Death of a Nation. Let's move on from that. Death of a Nation. What's Death of a Nation?
Oh, it's horrible. Dinesh D'Souza, he's a conservative, super conservative guy. Who makes these movies? He's been making them since Obama was president. Where he'll take a hint of a fact and twist it around. The thing in this movie that is getting a lot of the coverage, and rightly so, is he compares Donald Trump to Abraham Lincoln.
Wow!
And you know, they're sort of in the same boat. You know, they've got all these people against them, but they're going to fight to do what they have to save the country and all this stuff. It is insane. If you want to check out my Twitter feed or my Facebook feed, I'm getting hammered by these people. Of course, they haven't seen the movie, but they're telling me how wrong I am and how great he is and what a horrible person I am and our time is coming and, you know, and all that stuff. And I would recommend, this is weird. Everybody ought to see it, but you only need to see about 5 minutes of it to know what it is. And I cannot recommend that anybody pay to see it.
If somehow you can wait, maybe, I don't know that they can, I don't think they ever really, I'm suggesting to break the law. But it's just, you can probably watch the trailer. Just watch the trailer.
I'm watching the trailer right now, and it looks just dreadful. It looks like, hey, honey, let's go on a date tonight and watch this. Like, that'll be the last date I go on. And it's not the political. It's not even the political side of it, Bill. It just looks it looks dumb. It just looks dumb. Okay.
The only date I can think of that anybody would enjoy this would be Sean Hannity and Tucker Carlson if they went on a date.
Wow.
This would be their movie.
Yeah.
I mean, these things are awful. And the thing, and I think it's what we're finding out over time, eventually, unfortunately, is I think ultimately these things can be kind of dangerous because they really do rely on people's ignorance and their willingness to believe anything that one side says, and nothing that the other side says.
Okay, and so to that, and I'm being serious here, you sound as though this is more of a political view on your front. Not that you're taking a side, but when you say Tucker Carlson and Sean Hannity and it's people on that side, right? Because we are in this toxic environment. Do you think if somebody is just, I'm going to come in with an open mind, there's no way anybody can do that? And I'm being serious on this one, Bill.
I don't know. This is not a movie aimed for people with an open mind. This is a complete preaching to the choir thing.
Got it.
But to your point, I think that's what everything is now.
Yeah.
I mean, nobody, the people who watch Fox News don't watch anything else. The people who watch CNN or MSNBC don't watch Fox anything. News.
Right, right.
And it's there. I've said this before. If I knew the answer to fixing that, we would be having this conversation on my yacht. But I don't, and I don't know how to fix it. But I think the thing is, you immediately discount what may be a worthwhile opinion or fact or belief on somebody's part just because you're dismissing it out of hand. And that, to me, is the most dangerous thing of the last almost 2 years, is willful ignorance.
All right,
ignoring facts, ignoring truth. Because it doesn't fit with your particular worldview.
And I think it's on both sides. I was having lunch.
Sure.
I was having lunch with a very good childhood friend, and we were talking about our class reunion coming up, and this person kept using the term Trumpsters, and that she did not want to be around people that are Trumpsters or has deleted Facebook friends because they're Trumpsters. And I think that's dangerous. I just feel as though the open-mindedness of people has gone away, and to your point, you can make movies like this that are preaching to the choir and make gobs of money, gobs and gobs and gobs of money. And that sounds like your view on what's going on here, because this could be flipped the other way and you'd probably have the same view. I've talked to you enough through the years. The vitriol that's out there right now is clearly different than it's been in the past. But I think what your point is, the danger of what's going on out there in a movie like this. So you're saying don't even go see it because you just know it's one-sided. I gotcha.
It's also just, it's poorly made. I mean, it's a bad movie on top of that. I mean,
I'll just give my view then. The big question about Winnie the Pooh and Christopher Robin is, should Winnie the Pooh be wearing pants? GQ put that out. I guess I could lighten the load off of this a little bit as we wrap up the segment.
I say no.
Yeah, I'm with you. Jim Cummings voiced both Winnie the Pooh and Tigger, so I'm fine with that. Mel Blanc is somebody that I was big on through the years, so I would say go see this. Lighten it up a little bit.
And then again, keep Pooh pantsless.
There you go. I'll talk to you next week. Thanks.
All right.
See ya. There's Bill Goodykoontz. That's why I love having Bill on. A little fire. A little fire in the belly. Sports360AZ.com. We're of course, partner with Fox Sports Arizona, our television show, Brad Sussmat Football AZ. We have a few more airings this week. We have 16 airings during the week, before and after. Thanks for being with us. Enjoy your day.